Blessed are you, Lord our God, sovereign of the universe, the God who answers in fire. Please be seated. For a first sermon in a new place, you basically have two orders. First, introduce yourself, and second, the standing order, preach the gospel. Let's get one of those out of the way. My name is Kevin. Hi, Kevin. I'm the middle child of three. I was born, raised, baptized, and confirmed Roman Catholic before becoming an Episcopalian and years later pursuing ordination. I live in Falls Church with my wife Allison and two sons, Theodore and Ezekiel. Theologically speaking, perhaps my favorite Bible story is Elijah and the priests of Baal. Two altars are built on Mount Carmel, one to Baal and one to the Lord. God's anointed prophet Elijah challenges the false priests. You call upon your God, and I'll call upon mine. The God who answers in fire, let him be God. God shows up for Elijah. And I know that my Redeemer shows up for me and does so in fire. And so I added the God who answers in fire to a traditional Hebrew prayer, blessed are you, Lord our God. And it's become something of a mantra for me. For me, God is fire, a consuming fire, as they say in Deuteronomy, powerful and redemptive. It's possible that I've just theologized a youthful pyromania. I allow that possibility. Still, it was fire and smoke that led Israel through the desert, and tongues of flame that launched the disciples into the world. I welcome this kind of fire and flame. I will put my God up against any idol you have, and we'll see who answers. True, false, good, bad, right, wrong, beauty, ugliness. I was taught to believe in truth, in justice, in virtue. And I've experienced falsehood, injustice, and vice. These binaries are real. These oppositions are real. They're part of the very fabric of our universe. God divided light from dark, heaven from earth, the waters above from the waters below. Creation itself was an act of division, of marking distinctions. Jesus, we hear, brings not peace but a sword. I bring division, he says. But for those of us who've been on the wrong side of someone else's binary, gay, straight, male, female, black, white, rich, poor, liberal, conservative, saved, unsaved, today's gospel presents a problem. Jesus tells us two stories this morning. Hard as it is to believe, both are good news for us. Perhaps the text doesn't immediately strike you this way. Perhaps Jesus' parable sounds a bit too much like those religious traditions, denominations, or parishes you left behind. Maybe the parishes you passed on your way to get here. There's nothing wrong with a world where the good are rewarded and drawn to the bosom of a loving Jesus. There's nothing wrong with a world where evil is punished. That's a world some of us hope for. But we've all been on the wrong end of self-righteousness. At the mercy of people, even good Christians, who take the punishment side of that equation a little too seriously. We abhor these traditions, and we rightly want little to do with them. And moreover, we have friends, even loved ones, of different faiths, of different politics, of different hearts and minds, and we wonder, would God really burn them? And we wonder, do I want to be a part of something that would say that about the people I love? And yet here is this gospel where Jesus speaks of a terrible reckoning for the weeds among the wheat. Weeds born of evil and destined for binding and burning amid weeping and gnashing of teeth. God, through Jesus Christ, tells us two stories this morning. In the first story, God is coming and coming to set the world right. In the second, God is coming and coming for us. Both are good news. Let those who have ears hear them. Jesus relates the first story to the crowds. The crowds have likely heard stories like this. They love apocalyptic tales. They just love a good parable about the end of days, the end that everyone is looking for. The prophets are full of them. Jesus' own rhetoric is taking its cues straight from Ezekiel and Zephaniah, among others. The people know these stories. But Jesus' story is slightly different. Jesus tells us that the hoped-for master has arrived. And so there must be a pause, a breath, a passing of the spirit before the apocalypse. See, if you've been waiting for deliverance from the evil one, from deliverance from oppression, from poverty, from social ostracism, from a world that's been holding you down, that's done nothing but hold you down, then your enemies are clear. And the crowds and the servants know the enemy, and they are ready to uproot systemic evil and personal vice from their midst, root and branch. We know the enemy. Just give us the order, and we'll eliminate them, say the servants. But the judgment is not theirs to exercise. The land doesn't belong to them. Jesus' master, far from giving the order, says, no. Wait. Let them grow together. For in uprooting the weeds, the wheat would be compromised. Wait until the harvest, then sort them. People of different faiths, politics, or ideologies would just love to imagine this text as lending support to looking down on those who are different from us. After all, they're destined for burning. And for that matter, why not speed the process up and sanction cruelty and violence against them? But this parable has been read, and rightly so, in the opposite direction. For much of our church's history, this gospel has been used to promote toleration. The sorting is done at the harvest, at the end of days. And God, not me, not you, is the first and the last. God alone is God. There is no other rock, says the prophet Isaiah. Whoever would presume to take on God's role would soon find themselves becoming the very thing they seek to destroy. Just because people are awful to one another doesn't mean that a black and white world of distinctions and difference doesn't exist. It's just as human beings, we're horrible at seeing and respecting the distinctions that God has drawn. And we like to substitute our own. God comes to restore God's distinctions, to make visible true and false, just and unjust, good and evil. Make no mistake, Jesus says, God is coming. Indeed, God has come to set a broken world right. Justice is coming. Justice is here. Do not be afraid. Jesus reassures the people, reassures us, that all we have read from the prophets has come true. Jesus has arrived to put the world to rights. The kingdom is here. So Jesus tells a second story to the disciples. In interpreting his parable, Jesus makes his metaphor plain. Jesus is the Son of Man, the hoped-for master. But he adds a warning that appears in no other gospel. Jesus tells them, the Son of Man will send his angels, and they will collect out of his kingdom all causes of sin and all evildoers, and they will throw them into the furnace of fire. This is strange. The only time in the Testament that Jesus' kingdom is spoken as containing evil. Indeed, God's kingdom is not inaugurated when evil is vanquished, but when God begins to transform and redeem the evil, both within and without. As the vanguard of the early Jesus movement, the disciples have heard these stories before, and they know the targets of God's wrath: Rome, usurers, Pharisees, and they welcome Jesus' story. Explain it to us. Make it plain. Just say Rome, and we'll go. But Jesus responds with what is perhaps yet another parable. If Jesus had intended the weeds to stand in for Romans, usurers, or Pharisees, he would have said as much. Instead, Jesus says the master's reapers are coming for all the stumbling blocks and the things which practice lawlessness. Stumbling blocks and lawless powers are not necessarily other people. They're all around and in everyone. See, when you think about stories of weeds and wheat, you might be tempted to think that some people are weeds and some are wheat. Jesus' refusal to outright identify people in person should give us pause. The evil of which Jesus speaks is systemic. It's structural. It's nearly universal, and it gets into everything. It's in the stumbling blocks, the commercialism, the racism, the sexism that infects the way we live, and finally, the human soul. It's the evil within the human soul, the laziness, the arrogance, the cowardice. People of different faiths, politics, and ideologies would love to imagine this text as lending support to the idea that God is coming for you. God is coming for foreigners, Muslims, liberals, or conservatives, but he's not coming for me. Jesus' response is no, God has come for everyone, and especially the church. Sin exists. It's just not the sins that so many of you would like to have everyone worried about. All of creation groans for redemption, and in the consuming fire of God's mercy and justice, God reconciles all things to himself, even our vices. God can use anger. God can refine righteous indignation into conviction and faith. And God can use arrogance, refine it into the confidence necessary to challenge the powers that be. God can even use laziness. Lazy people tend to be very efficient. The fire has come. God from every field shall in that day all offenses purge away. Gather thou thy people in free from sorrow, free from sin, there forever purified in thy presence to abide. Just because God allows wheat to grow together with weed doesn't mean a black and white world doesn't exist. It simply means we must be vigilant in removing the plank from our eyes before criticizing the splinter in others. It means we must refrain from judgment. It means we must ask God to have compassion on our weakness and mercifully give us those things which for our unworthiness, as the collect says, we dare not, and for our blindness we cannot ask. It means we must trust in God and one another, speaking earnest truth in boldness and love. We as Episcopalians, as Anglicans, as Christians, we have to walk a fine line. We call it the via media, the middle way. Between the twin evils of self-righteousness, a religion so tied to dogma that you forget the people behind it, and a faithlessness where you're so tied to the people, anything goes. Between it must be this way and it doesn't matter. We are so tired of being beaten about the head about homosexuality in the church that we might be tempted to say, look, God doesn't care who you sleep with. And we are rightly livid at an exploitative prosperity gospel that we might be tempted to say, look, God doesn't care about money, okay? And we're so sick of a fastidiousness when it comes to liturgy that we might be tempted to say, look, God doesn't care what you're saying. Except that it matters. It matters a lot. God cares deeply that we find our way to loving, respectful relationships. God cares deeply about how resources are used or not. And God cares deeply that the words you sing not only resonate with you, but glorify God. And we ought to care too. And so we welcome fire. Fire that remakes the world and us with it. We crave not only a church that welcomes us, but invites us to transform. Us first, and the world with it. To burn out what is vicious in us, that the righteousness and virtue within can shine forth all the brighter. Make no mistake, God is coming. Indeed, God has come. to set broken people right, to bring healing when all of us are broken. Justice is coming. Justice is here. That which yearns from the foundation of the world for transformation will know healing. That which groans in all of creation will know justice. Jesus reassures the people, reassures us, that all we have read from the prophets has come true. Jesus has come and will answer our prayers, and he will answer in fire. Blessed is this God, the God who answers in fire. Amen.